Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business, where we talk about the business of the game of football. And as always, with me is Neil Stratton. Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm doing great, Justin. Good morning. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, so second week of preseason kicked off last night with a number of games. We'll have some more games tonight and then this weekend, as well as we push towards the regular season. We see that the Olympics are wrapping up. And one thing we did want to talk about today was the Olympics. How we think that the, you know, if football would ever be, you know, an American football would ever be an Olympic sport, and really how maybe some of the Olympic athletes that are world-class athletes would fare in the NFL. So let's start there, Neil. You know, kind of what's your thoughts in regards to, hey, would American football, I know that obviously the NFL is pushing towards, you know, Europe. We saw guys who haven't played in college football, you know, be drafted in the NFL. I mean, so it's becoming a different world in regards to American football now. Do eventually we see that this may be an Olympic sport, kind of like golf has come into the Olympics and et cetera there?
Well, if you look at all of the qualities of the Olympics that would appeal to the NFL, you know, from the fact that it's an international competition that brings so many different markets together, to the fact that advertisers are, you know, stuck like glue on the Olympics, the fact that it's a incredible broadcast property that can be monetized in so many different ways. It is the holy grail for the NFL, you know, from a marketing standpoint, from a money standpoint. And so you know that they would love to crack that market. At the same time, anyone who's watched the Pro Bowl the last few years realizes if NFL players aren't getting paid and paid handsomely, and if they're not going to play all the way out, and they're not going to, you know, if they're going to jeopardize their season, especially the timing of the way the Olympics run, it's almost forbidden that they would ever play. So I guess, or play in a manner that we expect that we see on Sundays. I guess there are two options, really. Either, I mean, as illogical as it sounds, either having high school players play, which may not be as crazy and oddball as you think, given how many gymnasts and even some swimmers are quite young, 14, 15, 16 sometimes. So it wouldn't be completely unheard of to have high school players play. And also the fact, or go to almost like a touch football aspect where you don't have full contact and don't jeopardize as many things. Of course, even in the face of that, there are a lot of obstacles. For example, obviously all NFL teams are in training camp right now, so that there's no way that, you know, Tom Brady's ever going to play in the Olympics, as well as the fact that most nations can't field a team. So, and I mean, the size of the rosters, the style of play, the fact that the NFL is a heavily nuanced thing, and it's the truest team sport of them all versus, you know, throwing a javelin or swim or anything like that, which are a lot more individual, are also obstacles. But I guarantee you that the NFL has looked at it from every direction and would love to figure out a way to get it into the games. It's just something that's not feasible, and it may not ever be feasible, but those are some ways that perhaps they could put a different spin on things and work it into the games. I know that, you know, again, it would be a total financial bonanza if they could ever make it work. And if you could, you know, I guess if you could just put players like your top receivers, your top quarterbacks, your top running backs into a game, even if it wasn't full contact, and if they're playing for, you know, gold, then that's something that maybe people would watch. I don't know. It's tantalizing, I think, to someone like me or you who are football guys and would love to, you know, especially if you enjoy watching the Olympics, and my house has had it on almost every night, you know, for the last 2 weeks. But it's just really hard to make it fit into that box because of the unique way that the Olympics is played and the unique way that all the nations come together in that way.
Yeah, I think the standpoint is that, you know, we've seen some, hey, you know, international things. If you had watched the, I think it was either the 30-30 or Football Life for Ricky Williams, where he was coaching basically a Chinese delegate of, you know, kind of young high school aged guys, you know, kind of there's, you know, different international competitions with football that, you know, don't come to the Olympics, where it is, you know, high school, you know, age players there. The only thing I could see there is, you know, is maybe that is where it starts there in regards to, hey, it's more the you know, under 18 or, you know, something like that, you know, select league where, hey, every country kind of put something together, and maybe we see it in, you know, 20 years from now, there with the, you know, with the you know, the NFL being more popular in regards to, you know, globally, and, you know, things, you know, look forward to, hey, how can they expand? Obviously, with, you know, the NFL pushing into Europe with, you know, the games that they have had there for the number of years, and now this year they go back to Mexico for a game, you know, again, a regular season game. They're talking about kicking off the 2018 season in China. You know, trying to again get the more markets again, because how are you gonna grow the game in regards to economics, you know, there? And that's something that, you know, Roger Goodell has done a good job of, is growing, you know, growing the games, the pot. I mean, people, you know, have banged on him for the disciplinary and obviously this Al-Jazeera, you know, controversy, you know, and different things like that. But he's done a good job in regards to growing the revenue, the total football, you know, money there, you know, in the NFL to be able to get the salaries where they are now. But now you got to try to figure out, hey, how can you do that? And again, going international and getting those international dollars would be huge. So do we see it something, you know, in the future, potentially, you know, but maybe more 20 years, you know, from now, you know, if there's still that same interest there.
Right. Well, you know, as you alluded to, the fact that Amoris Boehringer gets drafted this year, the fact that China is starting to have actual football played in leagues with NFL luminaries attached to them, the rising number of leagues in Europe, you know, there are probably half a dozen countries that have leagues. Again, they're not selling out. It's nowhere near what it's like on a Sunday in America in the fall, of course. But it is heading in the right direction if you're the NFL, and obviously the NFL is all about opening new markets and monetizing things and getting new eyeballs, and you know, the NFL would love nothing more if not just America, but the whole world was focused on their TV sets on Sunday afternoons in the fall. So it's something they're going to continue to push for. You alluded to the fact that Roger Goodell has been very successful in opening new markets and putting the brand, putting the shield in new places. And at the end of the day, that's where it's at for the commissioner of the NFL, and that's the owners are the bosses of the commissioner, and that's what's always going to put a smile on their faces. So we know that they'll continue to try to push in that direction if it's at all possible.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, one thing that you had alluded to and brought up where, you know, and is Usain Bolt, and how successful would he be in the NFL? Obviously, we've seen a number of track stars, you know, that have been, you know, both track stars and football players there. I mean, the guy that kind of brings to my mind real quick is Willie Gault, you know, and James Jett, you know, two guys that were kind of the, you know, Olympic-style, you know, track athletes that played in the NFL, played receiver. Do you think Usain Bolt, in regards to his speed and athleticism, could have an impact in the NFL?
Well, he'd be an exciting player for sure, but I think I saw, I didn't really read, but I think I saw that he talked about he's never even run a mile before, something along those lines. I mean, he's such a unique talent. Obviously, he's got incredible speed, but would it translate to the field? I don't know. I mean, you alluded to several players that have been successful in transitioning to the football field. You know, can he catch a football? Can he run a route? Would he be able to adjust to getting hit hard? Rather than just running a distance and it being over with. I don't know. I know a lot of teams would love to give him a shot, and I think he could probably make a lot of money doing it. It's just that I think he can probably make a lot more staying in Europe and being a featured track athlete where they have kind of the built-in audience for the sport. You know, here in America, track hasn't really gained that kind of foothold as an entertainment sport the way that football has. We know he has that one gigantic measurable, but would it translate? I don't know. You know, would a Usain Bolt ever be one to go over the middle? Questionable. Maybe the first time, maybe not the second time. I don't know. But I know there'd be lots of teams would love to give him a shot if he ever entertained that notion.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously the NFL is always about, you know, hey, trying to get more speed and athleticism on the field. And Usain Bolt would be an interesting, you know, thing if this guy would be, you know, far as the toughness. I mean, I think he's, like I said, he's a world-class athlete. Obviously, he's shown over the years there, you know, and then does that, hey, help translate more guys from the track and field aspect, you know, to the gridiron? And it, you know, would they have any interest in that? But for sure, the NFL would love to, those teams would love to see, hey, can they get that? And that's something that, you know, obviously the NFL is looking for, you know, different ways to get better and get stronger, be able to use technology and use different things like that. And on the latest episode of Hard Knocks, there was a new technology that's coming to the football field. It's a company called Mobile Virtual Player. And it's something that they just had launched here in August, and they've gone to some training camps. It's been on ESPN. Like I said, it's been on Hard Knocks. I don't know if you have had a chance to see that there. But one thing I do think, and I think this is going to be something that, you know, not only the NFL is going to take advantage of, but college football and, you know, high school football. Just because we're in regards to really very sensitive in regards to the health and safety of the players, that's a big focus, obviously, with the concussion and the different things like that, and really trying to get, you know, parents to, you know, buy into, hey, letting their son play football. There is really using these motorized kind of dummies to be able to, you know, step in for a person regards to, so you're still training and still getting the tackling, so you're not losing that, you know, but you're not, you know, having a chance to injure any, you know, anybody else there. So I thought it was really interesting, you know, on Hard Knocks. I think it was the most interesting thing they had on last week's episode in regards to, you know, different innovative things there. And, you know, kind of looking more at the website MVPDummy.com and, you know, and the different things that they've done on, you know, going to, you know, with Pittsburgh Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin and going to ESPN and different things like that. Like I said, it's a brand new technology that's come out there. And what other, I don't know if you had a chance to look at this, Neil. Do you see anything else that, you know, we'll be getting involved with? If we look at here, the current users are the Pittsburgh Steelers, Michigan State, Central Michigan, University of Minnesota, Western Michigan, Dartmouth College, Harvard University, St. Thomas Aquinas, and Davenport University. So a number of schools here in the state that I reside in. You know, do we see more innovative things that will get involved in the game of football?
Well, I think last year during training camp especially, there's a rash of injuries, and I can't remember all the top players that were missing time. So far, I think we've lost a first rounder and second rounder, or is that correct, to injuries? We've lost Sheldon Rankins, and then one of the Alabama defensive linemen that was drafted early on. I think, you know, those are linemen. They're not as sexy, not as exciting. However, if you start seeing quarterbacks who are already kind of put in mothballs during the preseason, wide receivers, running backs, those kind of players get hurt, then you'll start seeing a lot more. I just, because those are headline grabbing injuries, and I don't know how to say this delicately, coaches and GMs and people who are in high visibility positions don't like the negative press associated with injuries. And so when big time money-making, touchdown-scoring players get hurt, I think you'll start to see it a lot more frequently in the NFL. right now, I think you're probably seeing it on kind of an experimental basis. And frankly, I don't know how much of the product that's on the field has been purchased and how much of it is kind of lent to them as a way to get those companies exposure. And that'll be interesting to kind of look into and really explore. But yes, I think probably the direction we're going in a direction where obviously more and more technology has been introduced in the field, and you're starting to see chips put into footballs and chips put into helmets and chips put into shoulder pads so that teams can objectively measure how much force a player's getting subjected to and how hard they're running and how much they're really trying. And I'm sure there'll be a way to measure how much sweat they're producing and all those kind of things. And so, yes, logically, we've got a lot more that can be done with technology, and as it gets smaller and more compact and can take more of the stress off of players and absorb more of the hits and those kind of things. And I think it is going to go that way. The question is it going to move into the college arena as much as it will move into the pro arena? Because obviously the cost of hardware can be pretty high. And, you know, I don't know if Central Michigan's competing on the same field as Michigan when it comes to athletic budgets and how much they can really afford to put on the field. Again, I think a lot of those schools that are using it right now are probably using it on a trial basis, and it's kind of been lent to them. I could see the Power Five conferences using it a good bit more than, you know, the schools that don't get as much revenue from athletics and from football specifically. So I don't know. That's where you're going to see maybe more of the playing field not as level as we go forward, but perhaps that's less of a concern now that we're really seeing the kind of bifurcation of college football, and you're seeing the ones that are really making a lot of money moving in one direction versus the ones that are just kind of trying to keep their heads above water moving in a separate direction.
Yeah, and again, I think with you know, the big dollars that are involved, and especially I think the NFL, I wouldn't be surprised if all 32 teams, you know, purchase this product there just because of how this new CBA is and how that they don't want, you know, hitting, and they've limited the contact that you can have, so you can still train and do different things, you know, there, but it's not as, you know, intensive there on the body. So it's interesting, you know, and I think that's where, hey, when we're talking about the business aspect and what other things there, those are the things that, you know, innovation and that brings, you know, better technology and different things like that. And one thing in regards to training, you know, something that we talked about last week was the 1.5%, the, you know, kind of the agent fee with, you know, the NFLPA, you know, again, the standard, you know, fee that they want to, you know, agents to charge players. Again, it's not the max, but it's the standard of what they're going to. And you had a chance to talk to a number of agents as well as trainers. And in your Succeed in Football blog, you had a couple of trainers that you had talked to in regards to the 1.5%. Maybe you can share with our audience, you know, kind of a synopsis in what you kind of learned, you know, with the different trainers there in regards to what their thoughts were with the 1.5%.
Well, yeah, and as you referenced last week, we talked more to agents about the issue, and they were pretty animated and pretty vocal. Weren't willing to talk for attribution because they kind of feared maybe retribution from the NFLPA, and they don't want to rock the boat in that regard. This week we talked to trainers. Trainers are going to be probably the ones that are going to have to adjust most aggressively to this new way of doing business, because 3% was tough on agents, but at least if they kept the training rates somewhat reasonable and managed expectations and did things in a certain way, they could still certainly break even on the top players and or at least manage their risk on the lower round players. However, with the 1.5 as the standard now, it's going to be there are going to be a lot of agents that come in and say, okay, look, if you want to pay me 1.5, then I can't train you. If that's the case, how are trainers going to come in and fill that gap and reach out to players and say, hey, you know, how you can still train, you know, we know that you want to train. Training is important, and you don't want to lose that aspect of things in advance of your pro day. Here's how we can do it. I don't know that any of the trainers right now have really figured out how they're going to crack that code and how they're going to still offer all their services. We're seeing more services on training rather than less services. It's kind of like the expansion of technology into the football realm. There's a lot more technology, a lot more things moving up. So many good trainers out there that have really added a lot to the space and have made players a lot more athletic, have really improved their chances of performing in the NFL because the NFL has become such an analytics-minded sport, and 40 times and reps and all those things have become such a big part of it. I know that there have been trainers in the past who have tried a model whereas they ask the agent to pay on the backside if the player makes the team or if he makes a 90 or if he reaches some standard, whatever they want to make that. That's been tricky in the past because a lot of times the agent has good intentions going into it, but if a player makes a 90 but doesn't make a 53, he's not getting paid. So sometimes they aren't as reliable and aren't good as their word. How trainers start to partner more with the players is unknown, but if they do that, then perhaps they're going to need to be a little bit more aggressive about recruiting the players and reaching out to them and marketing to them and promoting their own services and partnering with a player in some way. Now, how a player pays for that is a little bit unknown. Obviously, there are some that have parents who do that, and we're seeing that a lot more where parents are willing to pick that up and they say, well, hey, I mean, I've spoken to parents in the past who said, my son got a full scholarship to college. We're going to pick up the 10K or the 15K or the 20K of training kind of as a trade-off there. And so maybe you see that a little bit more, but I know that there's going to have to be some way that trainers bridge that gap because the day of agents regularly, really the day of agents really regularly paying $20,000 to train a player who's a long shot to get in has kind of waned. Now that agents aren't getting 3% as a standard anymore, it's really going to go away. And I think ultimately there'll be some trainers that get out of the business because there's a perception out there that combine prep is easy money and there's no overhead and all these players are going to come running in and you're going to be able to charge all this money. That's not the case at all. Now we see the 1.5 as a standard. It's going to be an even bigger trick, an even bigger challenge for trainer to sustain things. I think the top trainers in the business, the ones that are regularly attracting top 50, top 100, top 200 type players will still be around because they're marketing to agencies that have got pretty deep pockets and understand that first rounders are going to demand that kind of training. It's just down at the level of the guys that are typically training 150 to 400 type players that are relying a lot more on local kids that come in and maybe live at their parents' house or live in their dorm and can't pay the big numbers, they're going to not see agents picking that up anymore. And so to rely on college kids to do that may be a tall order. So, you know, I say regularly, and I think you've heard me say this before, Justin, the business turns over in a sharply new direction about every 3 years. And this looks like the start of another 3-year cycle where we start to see how trainers and agents and the players themselves adjust to a new economic reality. And, that's I guess that's one reason why the people in the football business have to be exceptionally bright and exceptionally agile and exceptionally open to change, because change is coming. Seems like nearly every day there's a landmark change to the business that everyone's got to adjust to, and this is the latest one. So it'll be interesting to see in December and January how this shapes things and how this affects things. It's not too far off, and a lot of hard decisions are going to have to be made.
Yeah, I think the standpoint, though, is that for the most part, you know, a lot of these trainers will use combine prep as a loss leader, kind of what the networks use football, you know, in regards to as a loss leader, meaning that, okay, hey, we'll pay for the NFL there so we can promote our American Idol and 24 and what other, you know, shows that they want to do. And, you know, I think some of those trainers could say, okay, hey, let's use this to be able to go get the high school kids. And that's what they've done, but they've kind of, you know, done it, you know, they've kind of been able to, you know, eat at both ends. Okay, we're going to charge big bucks for these NFL guys, you know, which would always crack me up was these trainers would, you know, charge, like George Whitfield will charge $25 for these guys to train with him during the summer so he can, you know, abide by the NCAA rules, you know, but, you know, then we'll then charge the agent, you know, $10,000 to train the quarterback there, you know, the same thing with other trainers there. So, I mean, again, I know that's how they're able to follow the rules and be able to, you know, get a relationship with a player and different things like that. And then when you go to recruit that guy, well, I've been training with so-and-so trainer for the last 2 years. Oh, how much has he been charging? Oh, $25. And then when you call the guy and be like, oh, so you train so-and-so and you know, okay. Oh yeah. But I want $10,000. Well, you just charge this kid $25. So I think that's the comedy of errors there with the trainers there. And, you know, the standpoint of when regards to the NFLPA says, hey, we're going to try to, we're trying to help the whole, you know, players and different things like that. And I think you articulated it great there. It really, what it hurts is it doesn't hurt the first rounders and the top 100 guys. It hurts the 150 to 400 guys, because those are the guys that, you know, the guys, you know, aren't going to be able to go to EXO and different things like that. And we're using some of these good trainers that were kind of that middle road, you know, and kind of lower level, you know, guys that, you know, trains those lower level guys. But, you know, now with this, you know, you can't. You know, it's going to be difficult, and I could see, you know, like you had, you know, I talked with, you know, Matt Gates from FitSpeed, and then Tony Villani from XPE, you know, in regards to, hey, can these trainers get creative and different things like that? Now, my question would be, and, you know, we've got 2 minutes, so we can't really get into that. Do we think that the NF with this, and maybe the trainers are more acting like agents? And we see the NFLPA regulated the financial advisors. Do we see the NFLPA coming in and regulating more of the trainers? You know, and again, they could do it. I mean, they regulated the financial advisors, and you can't recommend a financial advisor that's not NFLPA certified. So do they do that to, you know, the NFLPA coming in there and, you know, do that with trainers? Maybe that's something down the road. I don't know. I haven't heard of anything like that, but to me that makes logical sense if you're going to do that with the financial advisors to do with the trainers, because these are around your union players. So it'll be interesting there. And like you had said, everything kind of, there's always a shift in the direction of the business and every 3 years there. So with about a minute and a half, Neil, going, what else is going on with Inside the League? Anything that, you know, we wanted to mention here as we wrap up the show for this week?
Well, we'll continue to look at the business from all angles. We're still, of course, powering ahead with our profile reports, working on kind of the direction that teams are going as they evaluate. As you know, Justin, scouts are starting to filter out across the country and look at schools. And while they spend the early part of training camp with their teams, evaluating their teams to make sure that they have a good handle on where they need, what weaknesses need to be addressed, now they're starting to go across the country and start looking at players and starting to put together their boards, obviously at the very, you know, the 25,000 foot level rather than what we'll see as we get into February, March, and April. We're tracking them in there too, and we're looking at players, and we're talking to people about recruiting and all those kind of things, and of course the latest trends. So business as usual for ITL, always a big time of the year. We also have our contact lists out there as we try to help people reach out to parents and recruit responsibly and do it the right way.
For sure. Well, Neil, you have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Justin.